Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, a podcast that aims to address divorce, separation and co-parenting here in the UK, countering the often sensationalist way it's portrayed in the media, challenging the status quo and driving for reform. On each episode, I'm joined by experts to discuss divorce, separation and co-parenting from different angles and to give their opinions and to debate them. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor and divorce coach, co-founder of Amicable, the divorce services company, and host of this, the Divorce Podcast. In this episode, I was joined by Yuri Sonata. Yuri was born and raised in Surabaya, Indonesia, and is a business owner as well as a single mother to her beautiful son, Kai. We explore the various challenges faced by single working parents, and Yuri shares some fantastic tips on how to make the day-to-day just that little bit easier. We look at Yuri's upbringing and how by having strong, supportive role models around her has helped in her journey to becoming a single parent. We discuss her marriage and, of course, her divorce and her relocation to Los Angeles. Yuri uses her social media to share this dialogue with others, which she's found cathartic. And in particular, she shares fitness tips and her love of food, and we discuss how food is her love language for her friends and family. If you really loved this episode or want to hear more episodes like this, then please make sure to rate us on your preferred listening platform. Enjoy the episode. Welcome, Yuri.
Hi. Hi, Kate. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's lovely to have you. And thank you so much for joining us. What an amazing bio. And for somebody who's barely even started, it's incredible. It's lovely to see.
It feels like forever years ago, though.
I'm sure it does. Yes. When you've lived the life, it does feel like it's taken a while to get there, doesn't it? Now, this podcast is all about divorce and separation and co-parenting. So I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about how you came to be a single parent and tell me a little bit about your sort of relationship journey.
Okay. So when I came to the US, I don't really have so much an idea of what love is. So I grew up in very small kind of community and a very strict culture that we were told to, you know, marry someone who loves you, take care of you. Not much about love. It's more about being committed and being in a long-term relationship. So when I came here with no plan and I actually was engaged when I was in Indonesia, I came kind of like, you know, looking for what we call a security. I think as a woman, we term to kind of like go towards that and not really understanding the meaning of love. Of course, being together for 13 years and my ex-husband was a very lovely man. I'm not going to take that away from him. Really tried to take care of me and we tried to take care of each other. And I think in a lot of ways, we just grew apart. And I realized that being in a relationship that I think I love him in a different way or with a different reason. With our value and spirituality, it's already drifting apart. Being in that relationship after my postpartum depression was not a really good, it's not really easy to do. So I caught myself being very angry because I have a lot of resentment and I thought it was towards him, but apparently it was towards myself. And that's when I realized that like this relationship no longer fulfills me. So then I felt a lot more angrier. So I don't want to be that angry mother my whole life. I always kind of like, I don't want to be an angry mother because I grew up with one and I promised myself to not be one. And after I seeing myself turning into impatient and angry and get really upset about little things, and I knew that I have to get out from my relationship so then I can be a better mother.
That's quite a big and brave decision then at that point, isn't it? When you've come looking for security, you've come looking for a long-term commitment, and there you are on the brink of kind of your sanity with your relationship feeling like that's the thing that has to give. That must have been really challenging to actually, you know, and to stare over the precipice. Well, I mean, did you have a plan? Did you know by that point that you would be able to work or support yourself? Were you terrified? That must have been scary.
Very, very scary because he was basically, I will say, my first home, right? When I came here. So like just, it's funny because to me, I felt like I'm going that twice. When I moved here, I left my home. when I left my ex-husband, I left my home again, right? So, but I feel like I just knew in my guts, I knew for sure that one thing that really motivated me and make me braver is because I really do not want to be that mother, like I said, you know. So I know anger and resentment is the one that makes you, one, very unhappy. And how am I going to be happy and have to find that myself? And I'm not going to drag somebody else to like be in there because, like, you know, to me, staying is actually more selfish than leaving. So luckily, you know, in America, I'm not sure, but in the UK, there's a lot of single mother. Even at the salon that I was working at, most of them was a single mother. So I feel like because of looking at them thriving in their own way, it gives me so much strength, and knowing that a lot of other women, everyone around the world, not just in America, is a single mother. And if they can do it, and I can do it. And that's how I feel like was giving me a lot more like strength. I think the community, yeah. Even though I don't have my family here, you know, I have my sister here, but she lives a little bit further. So not like I can have somebody to like, you know, be there for Kai, but I know that we can always kind of figure things out.
So it sounds like it was important to have role models around you, people that were already living the life you were sort of destined for, if you like.
1,000%.
Yeah. And I think that's quite important, isn't it? Because we always say to people, you know, it's really important to gather around other single parents because you are on this really kind of unique journey and you can take strength from watching other people who've done it. And it's so scary when you're at the beginning and when all of your friends are in couples and it makes you feel a bit overwhelmed. Like, you know, I'm the only one. I don't know how to do this. But how inspiring to have lots of other strong single women around you. That must have been amazing. I mean, what do you think are the unique challenges you face when you're a single working parent compared to, you know, others?
You have four hands.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, financially and physically, of course, emotionally, because even though, yes, I'm a mother, but a lot of time when we're at home, there's only one parent, right? And I think in a lot of ways, you still have to be a dad too at home. So you kind of have to wear all the hats when you're at home. So not really just being a mother, but I also have to be a father for him. Even though, yes, he has his father and his own home. And I'm not sure if he has the same idea the way I'm thinking, but that's how I think the challenge being a single parent is to be able to do it all. Even though, you know, we have a 50-50 custody, but we still have to be both parents when we are with the kid.
Yes. So it sounds like you've managed to create then a good, solid co-parenting relationship. Is that fair enough? I'm sure it's not been without its challenges, but do you think it's in a good place?
I think it's in a good place right now, but just kind of like, it's not going to be a smooth sailing. I mean, not everyone have the same experience, obviously, depending on, you know, the ex and stuff, but hopefully learning to communicate better with each other and have a better understanding with each other, I think hopefully we'll get into a better place. As it's right now, he is still not comfortable for me to be around him. So then we can't really be in the same like room when Kai is there, which I think that's kind of like still sad because I have to like remind him one day we have to do it. If Kai graduation or birthday, you know, like soon enough, he will be able to ask those, like he will want both, you know, for both parents to be there. And hopefully both parents will be able to grant that wish, right? For the sake of the kid. Hopefully one day.
Yes. But it's always a work in progress, I always think, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned there this big C word, communication. And, you know, whenever we talk to people about their experiences in terms of co-parenting, and whether we talk to experts or just people who are doing it, everybody says the key is good communication. What does that actually mean for you? What does your communication look like? Give us an example of like good communication. What works?
I have to learn so much about that too, because first, English is not my first language, right? So there's a lot of culture gap between like me and my ex-husband, obviously, even though, yes.
Well, just to clarify then, is your ex-husband a native English speaker?
He is. He's Korean, but he was born and raised in the US. So there's a lot of culture gap, in my opinion, when we're like communicating. Sometimes in Asia, or I believe in a lot of like other countries, like a lot more straightforward, but it might seem a little bit harsh, like I would like to say. So I have to learn along the way. And I feel like learning about communicating is also learning more about understanding the other person instead of just trying to speak our mind. But we, of course, like, you know, we all know this, like we all, a lot of us fail to listen, even though we're just listening, but we're not understanding where they're coming from. And learn to let go of all the attachment before we get into the communication. Also really important because we're not together anymore. You know, so there's a lot of expectation in the beginning that I think was hurting both of us. So like whenever we spoke, especially if the other person is still hurting, you know, hurt people. So you just kind of keep going on for going to no direction. So my suggestion is if you can't really get through a lot of this communication, like how to split responsibility and stuff, have a third person or mediator at first, which we have in the beginning. But now I think after the divorce, I took a lot of time and therapy to really learn about who I am, who he is too, and just like what went wrong in the relationship and what can I do to be better. So now I feel like I'm in a so much different place and I have so much more understanding of who he is. So when he was trying to come to almost like an attack, I don't took that personally anymore. And I think that makes it so much easier to communicate with him. So instead of like punching back when he's like throwing a punching line, I try to like educating him. Oh, it's not necessary to say certain things and we can talk it out this way. I think learning that to me helps so much about with our communication.
That's a really good tip, isn't it? Because you know yourself, you can feel immediately hooked back in. It's almost like they fly fish a hook out, don't they? And it grabs you and then you're straight back into that old pattern of argumentative communication. But if you can just stand there and not let that hook attach, you're giving yourself time and space to be able to respond in a more, like you say, adult way, a less defensive way, and ultimately a way that can be heard perhaps by the other person rather than just striking back. It's super interesting. I mean, you talked a little bit there about, you know, the importance of having a third party, a mediator, a divorce specialist, a coach, somebody there to help you. What do you think you learned from having that third person there? What did that bring to your ability to disentangle yourselves?
Yes, I think it's a lot of reality check for the both party because like I say, it's almost like you said, she said, right? Like if we're going to start on that, you know, I said, it's not going to get anywhere. So I think having someone that they can like, you know, you can trust and to be the mediator. So like, you just kind of like, sometimes if you just need to shut your mouth, you have to shut your mouth, you know, and having that, like a slap on the face by like the reality check for the both of us, I think it helps a lot to like, you know what, let's just be quiet and listen for once. So then we can actually listen to each other. It's not like speaking on top of each other.
But I think as well, that's kind of like the second important point you've mentioned, isn't it? Often when we communicate, we fall into the trap of needing to get our message across. And we think the more we say it, or if we say it in different ways, or we say it in a stern voice or a quiet voice, or we go up or down at the ears, that somehow this magic of saying it and repeating it is going to get through. And I think what was really interesting about what you said was actually one of the things that you've learned through your own therapy is to understand, not necessarily to sympathize or to like or to whatever, but to understand the perspective of your ex. And that has helped you in getting your message across. So it's kind of a roundabout way, isn't it? But it feels like that's actually quite important, that need to understand the other person's perspective.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So you talked a little bit about the other single mothers that you knew when you were working. Tell me a little bit about how that support network kind of came together. What was important? Who was in it? You know, what help did you get?
To me, I think it's more of the courage of doing it. I'm a little bit difficult to ask a favor. I think it's just not in my nature. So as much as I can, because I know I only have him 50% of the time. So when I have him, I want to be with him anyway. So most of the time I really try not to ask for help when I don't really have to. But I think the courage of like seeing them be able to do it all by themselves, I think that's what gave me the most empowered me. Yeah. And then obviously most of them also have what they grew up here. So they have a lot more help. And, you know, in their family and around. And I know from day one that I don't have that luxury, but then I know that I'm going to be okay because since like everything is about managing the time anyway. So I know that the extra hand, I'm not going to need it so much until like I really need it. And I do know my friend will always, you know, be there for me if I really have to. So that kind of give me also like reassurance and like security in that part.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what you say about our inability sometimes to ask for help. I think, you know, really that really resonates with me because we're trying to spin so many plates and you're used to just having to do it all on your own. There are some times when you can't do it all on your own and you do have to ask for help. And I wonder how easy a lot of us find that. I personally don't find it very easy. I don't want to impose on people. I'm frightened that I'll put them in a really awkward position and they won't be able to say no and it will be really inconvenient. And you sort of go round and round in a million sort of silly loops, don't you? But actually it's that courage to ask, the courage to show your vulnerability and to accept and to show people that you need help. A lot of the time, what I've found is that people are just so happy to help and do something specific because you always get into that, oh, if you need any help, just shout. And it's all so vague and it's well meant, but it's not actually very helpful, is it? So to actually be able to ask somebody something concrete, I think is quite wonderful if you could, but it does take quite a bit of courage. Did you have that naturally or did you find that difficult?
I mean, a lot of my friends always remind me like, you have to ask. It's okay to ask. But I think, like I said, I think it depends how you grow up. I think just in my nature, I know there's something to do with my childhood trauma. Like I look at myself like to be a burden almost. So like, it's almost like if I'm asking someone, it's almost like burdensome to others. And I'm still learning on that to let go of that too. But I think it's going to take a lot longer, you know, but I think I'm getting better at it slowly.
Yeah. It's really important, isn't it? I mean, you obviously had almost a ready-made group of people. You had people you could see and identify with. And now it strikes me that you are providing that for other people, even if you're not in physical proximity through your socials and that kind of stuff. How important is that to you to be there for people?
Oh, very. I think if I want to talk about we live in purpose, to me, my purpose is actually helping others, you know, deep down in my heart. And like you said, I'm lucky enough that I was surrounded by a lot of like single mother that encouraged me and I can see it, you know, physically that they're thriving and happy. But a lot of my followers actually don't have that, especially if they come from my hometown or my country, because divorce is still a taboo thing and like it's just not okay. So many of them came to me, will send me a message and then like they don't know where to go and they came to me. And I took that as like a big honor. Like they trust me and they come to me even though we never met in person or whatever. They're just, you know, following my journey. But I love that they can come to me and I can help them out as much as I can. And yeah, I think that's beautiful to have like, you know, I know social media has a lot of like negative, like, you know, things about it. But to me, I think it brings a lot of positivity because like I said, I'd be able to connect with so many women around across the world and I'll be able to like help them and like encourage them, like, you know, privately.
Yeah. And so, you know, you do a lot of stuff on food, for example, don't you as well? And that's kind of quite central to having a child, raising a child and putting healthy food on the table and being able to cook and all of that kind of stuff. How did that come about? Where did that come from?
Because when I grew up in my country, like at least in my family, nobody say, I love you. Like I never have my dad, my dad did say that, like my mom, but like saying I love you is not really a thing. So like love actually come from food. So I always kind of see love and food is kind of like love is food. So, and I do believe in the alignment of your mind, your body and your soul. You know, I believe in that 100%. So to me, nourishing like my son, not just with my words, with my action, but also with food, so like it will feed him from like his, you know, his mind, his soul and his body. That's what I think that to me, why food is so important to like just as much as showing love.
And how do you find the time then to fit in all the cooking and everything else? Then what do you have like some time saving tips that you can share?
So I learned, I mean, the thing about cooking you can't really overthink so much of it. Like sometimes our brain, it kind of get tangled because of get overwhelmed, right? Basically. So I always give this tip to like some of my friends who like become a new mother and they have now to have to find a time to cook. It's easy if you make a list of what you can cook first. First of all, do that first. And in the time to be a million recipe, just do like maybe like 10. You can like managing it into a little bit more like writing it down. It's easier to see and you can kind of give an idea in every day what you're going to make. So you're not like jumping too much of one recipe to the other. So when you go grocery shopping, you think of like one vegetable or like one type of meat. How many dishes I can make with this? So then first you save money. Second, you save time. You know, third, you can save, what do you call it? Like not wasting a lot of the produce. So to me, I don't cook anything more than, to me, I cook 15 to 30 minutes is max. Utilizing a lot of those pressure cooker Instant Pot is like, is a winner. Right. So there's a lot of cooking fast pasta recipe that you can do, a lot of like, you know, thing that you can toss, but like, don't overwhelm by like, there's so many different recipes. I think just write it down, do, you know, three at a time. And then slowly you will get used to that, the rhythm of cooking, and you'll get a lot faster with it.
I'm glad it's still relying on the lists thing. Nothing has changed then. But yeah, you're right. Because you sometimes come up with great ideas and then you do them once or twice and you forget about them, don't you? So actually keeping a library of all the different dishes that you can just whack out. And like you say, if they're quick and easy recipes, that's absolutely a winner, isn't it? I guess linked to the food and the kind of this idea of feeding the body and the soul is the health and fitness stuff that you do as well. So where has that come from? Why is that important to you?
Yeah, because I believe in the healthy mom, happy mom, you know, a good mom. Thank you to me. You have to be healthy and happy to be able to be a good mom. Because like I said, if there's no alignment between your body and your mind and your soul, like it's not easy to be happy. And if you're not happy, it's just not easy to be. I don't want to say this in a bad way. You can't be a good mom. Of course, we all try our best to be a good mom, right? But we also want to live longer. To me, like I want to be healthy because I want to live longer for my son. You know, I want to walk him down the aisle. I want to be able to, you know, be the grandmother of his children, like his kids. If I'm not taking care of my body, who's going to take care of myself? You know, especially if you're a single mom. Like, I think just for single parents in general, like we can't really have anybody, like nobody's going to take care of you. At the end of the day, who's going to take care of you is yourself. You know, so, and I think also in a lot of way, I want to teach that everything that we teach to our kids is like what we do with what they see, right? To me, it's like having them that see that, like, I'm reading the book, eating healthy, going to work out. Even Kai know that I work out. It's really, I think it's really cute. So then I think you kind of give them the, like, this is how what we do in everyday life. It become like part of a lifestyle. And I want him to also pick up that lifestyle for himself.
So you're role modeling, and I always think it's kind of like, it's self-respect, doesn't it? And, you know, when you're juggling a million plates, like you often are, spinning a million plates as a single mom, it's very, or a single parent rather, it's very easy, isn't it? Just to think they're the easy things to cut, how I eat, when I eat, whether I exercise. But it's like that whole put your own oxygen mask on first, isn't it? You've got to look after yourself because you are your own tool, aren't you? You are the tools for your children. And therefore, if you let yourself go and you're not happy and well-rested and fit, then it's impossible. It makes doing all the other stuff so much harder. So that self-care, that self-love feels to me like it's really important and something you demonstrate beautifully on your socials really nicely.
Thank you. I try.
And then you've got the whole makeup and the beauty side of things as well. That's really important. Talk me through that. So is that what you trained in originally?
When I came here, I always kind of, I think by nature, I'm good at it with like makeup and hair. I think I'm just a creative in general. And the whole beauty thing actually came from, I grew up very tomboy and very, very insecure about myself. And learning, you know, to make someone to feel beautiful. Again, you feel good when you look good. When you look good, you feel good. It comes together, right? And I think that's also very important because a lot of mothers let go of themselves after they become like a mom. And I always remind them, we can't let go of ourselves because we have, again, we have to look good to feel good, look good or feel good. You know, it's always come together. And I'm here to remind all my clients and all my followers that we don't have to let go ourselves just because we're a mother. That's, to me, is very important, because it's important for us to feel like ourselves.
Yeah. So you share so much, and it's just wonderful to listen and to watch you. But where does that confidence to share that come from? And in particularly, you know, there's trolling and all the other awful things that go on social media, as you alluded to earlier. But what gives you the strength and the courage to just stare that down and to be able to be yourself and so authentic?
I'm doing that mostly for the younger self of me. I always say that. Yeah, because she's been through a lot of things that nobody stand up for, nobody speak up for her. And she was mostly silenced my whole life. So that's why I feel like I owe that little girl this voice to like speak up and stand up for her and showing up to the world that she's not that person that what whoever like labeled her when she was younger. And I can be proud of that. And I know I want to make her proud.
That's lovely. And you sound like you're on a journey. So are you, you know, you've talked about keeping yourself fit and healthy and looking good. Are you dating? Are you back in that space? Or where is your path going to go from here?
I was dating. I just got out in a relationship about 3 months ago. Yeah, so I definitely put myself out there, but I like to take my time. I'm not in a hurry into any relationship. And that's like one thing that I always tell a lot of my newly single or newly divorced like parents, don't jump onto anything so fast. First, take care of yourself. I think because I'm not sure if this is also going for men, but I think a lot of women maybe felt like when they got in a relationship, they kind of like look for another thing to latch on, because it is scary to be single. When you're being alone, it's almost like you kind of get used to that extra hand that you have. So then you kind of felt a little bit almost tipping, you know, like not balanced or like, so I think a lot of women kind of try to find that little other legs or like other hand, like so quickly to like latch onto anything, but don't do that, because we need time to heal and to refine ourselves. Because when we're in that relationship, we're already, you know, you are with someone, you lost some part of yourself. So like every time you break up with someone or like be out from a relationship, you kind of have to gain yourself together back first before you like moving on to another person. Make sure that you are solid as a person before moving on to another person is very, very important.
Yeah, I think it is important, because otherwise you're just papering over the cracks, aren't you? And you're taking your, you know, damaged self into the next relationship, and those same issues are going to arise, aren't they? So I really think that's a really big, important part. You need to understand and heal and then go on. And if you've got people listening now and they want tips and advice then about how to move on and the important lessons you've learned as a single parent, what are your top single parent tips?
So for me, I think, like I said, I think always love yourself first. That's 100%. Because you're not going to look for a partner to make you happy or make you, you know, to make you happy. You have to find a partner who make you happier. Because if you have to be happy first before you look for another partner to like make you happy, because nobody's going to make you happy. That's the thing. So then if you're going to keep looking for this the same, again, you're going to fall into the same pattern if you don't fix yourself first. You know, so to me, I know that I'm good and I'm happy. So either I'm being with someone who make me happier and better, or nothing, or don't date. You know, if they're not making you better and happier, just don't date. And then, of course, like, especially if you're single parents, like, you kind of have to see this person, not just to be a good husband, is to be a good father, right? So, like, definitely a lot harder, you know, finding a good man is harder now to find a good man.
Yes.
You know, but like I said, I think we attract who we attract, right? I think having a lot more understanding of, like, who you are, it's much better to get into a better relationship. I think that will be like my biggest tip. So like, don't fall so quickly for, you know, empty promises, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And Yuri, where can people find out about you? So if they want to, you know, immerse themselves in this really positive and wonderful journey that you're on, and to get your tips on a regular basis, run us through your socials. What are your channels? Where can we find you?
Is that Yuri Sinata, just like my name, Y-U-R-I. S-I-N-A-T-A.
Brilliant. And you're on?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's on Instagram.
Brilliant. All right. Well, look, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Some really interesting kind of thoughts, tips and ideas about how to navigate the world of single parenting. I'm very grateful. And of course, you can find out more about me. I'm on Twitter at Kate_Daly. You can hear about new podcast episodes by following at divorce_podcast. And if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to listen to more, then please subscribe by visiting thedivorcepodcast.com. Yuri, it's been fabulous talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you as well for listening.